You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey everybody, welcome. Sorry this took a little longer than normal. There seemed to be some weird technical issues on my computer, but you know, you make it work when you need to. So I will start with, I hope you're having a good day. This episode is going to have even more technical issues because my mixing board didn't work and we had to re-record this on Skype, and it was just one of those episodes, man. I think this one in particular is cursed, so bear with us. If you are listening to this, I appreciate it, and of course, I love each and every single one of you. With that in mind, please rate and review us, give us 5 stars wherever you are listening, because that really helps people find us. And on top of that, if you want to meet me in person, please, please, please come to see me at Cineprov. I will be performing March 1st, along with Evan and Larry as we do Bailout, a David Hasselhoff production. Hope to see you there. Thanks. Bye.
I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we're going to watch every episode of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Every episode?
Every single one.
In order?
From an unearthly child to, you know, the future. And we're going to do it in a podcast that we call...
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
WatchYourRassilon.com. And we're also a part of the ESO Network. So check us out or whatever.
Please.
Stay Rassil Awesome.
Stop trying to make Rassil Awesome a thing.
Nope.
Welcome to Myopia Mornings. This is a podcast dedicated to revisiting the TV shows we all loved as children and seeing just how well they hold up. This month, we watched the absolutely classic Batman, the animated series. It's about Batman, the legendary DC Comics super rich superhero, brooding in his cave and beating up wacky villains. It's a wonderful show. And to discuss whether it holds up, today we have on our panel a Mr. John Copsey. Say hello to the people.
Hello.
We have Thomas Herman.
Hello, everyone.
Mr. Nick Hoffman.
I'm still here, guys.
Still here. The beautiful, wonderful Aaron Miller.
Hi.
And I, of course, am your host, Mr. Scott Miller. Now then, let's jump right in here. Let's get started. This is the point in the show where we like to do a synopsis to refresh the listeners' memories, but of course, this is about Batman, so I don't know if it's necessary, but it's a segment we do, so I'm going to make Nick give us an overview.
Sure, so this is your, I believe it's early 90s, like 93, which I realized I should have looked up before I started talking, but fuck it.
Yeah, 92, started in 92.
Hey, nailed it.
There you go.
All right, and so this is 92. This is WB Afternoons. This is where you probably saw it if you saw it, which you should have seen it. This is Kevin Conroy as Batman. This is Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker as the Joker. But what you'll recognize from it is the kind of neo-gothic, super simple animation. It's not short on frames, but it's very stark. It's very... I don't even know how to put it. It's stunning in many ways. This is kind of the highlight of early 90s animation. Thomas, I'm sure you're the one who's trying to cut in. I know you.
Oh, yeah. No, it's simple, but it is not easy. Like, it is wonderfully beautiful, though. I mean, it's an amazingly done show.
Well, and to the credit of what is nearly impossible, this show is able to not only kind of redefine Batman, but reestablish all the villains, all the characters in 22-minute segments, invent new ones. Like, this is where Harley Quinn comes from. She's a relatively new character and is immediately embraced by the fandom. And never feel pretentious, never feel over the top. This show, in some ways, is an animation masterpiece in what animation should do. It's huge in scope, but the art carries it in an incredible way. So to show it, we like this show so much, we thought we should do, probably down the line, a second episode. So with Scott, I helped chose 4 episodes, all in the first season-ish. This is weird because it's WB, so there's like 75 episodes in the first season, technically.
Yeah, this is difficult because on Amazon, you've got them in volumes. They put them on DVD on volumes. And so it's like, oh, we're watching volume 1 and volume 2, but season 1 is 70 episodes and season 2 is 14 episodes. So we watched 4 episodes from the first year and a half of the show, I guess is a way to put it. I don't know if seasons is the right way to break it up.
Exactly. And then as we're kind of alluding to, I believe, Thomas, you were telling that our mutual friend, Ren, brought up this point that children's shows essentially revolve around the 3-year cycle.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the length of time a child watches a show, Thomas.
Yeah, no. So it basically is kind of around like that specific part of the generation. So if you catch them right at the beginning, by the time it ends, they're moving on to older shows. And the children that are coming up behind them have no interest in watching the shows that their older brother or that older kids were watching. They want their own shows. There's a joyous selfishness to childhood, and networks pander to that because it makes money.
And to wit, this show is essentially 3 years, and then that 4th year no one wants to talk about. So when we return to this, we'll probably do 3rd and 4th year.
Yep.
Hooray.
Well, Nick kind of got us started here, and we'll go around the virtual room here and get everyone's memories of the show as a child, and I'll get us started. I definitely watched this every time it was on. I'm glad you mentioned WB Afternoons. I'm like, oh yeah, that was the block. That was it. Come home after school and watch Batman. And it wasn't like just me watching Batman. I mean, I know my dad watched it. I know my brother watched it. I mean, this was family sit down and watch Batman, the animated series, which was pretty cool. I mean, this is like when the Tim Burton movies had just come out, the first two. And I mean, Batman was really big at the time. And for me, what really carried the most for me was the opening titles. With that Danny Elfman theme from the movies and the little like silhouettes of Batman in the shadows beating the hell out of these crooks, the little head swoop out of the way of a punch that he does. Like I remember that so vividly. And anyone standing on the rooftop, all iconic for whatever Batman does that for. And then Mark Hamill as the Joker. I mean, for me, that's like the greatest thing. And the voice acting across the board is amazing. But, I mean, I go around just being like, did you know Mark Hamill played the Joker? Did you realize that's the best Joker that there is? Like, do you want to put him up against Heath Ledger? That's the best one. That's the best one. So that for me, that I've got very vivid memories, and I love this show.
Did you know Mark Hamill was the Joker when you were a kid?
I don't know.
When you were a kid, did you know that?
I don't know.
Because I definitely did.
No.
Well, Aaron, yeah, go ahead. And what do you remember about growing up watching the show?
So I loved this show. Probably the biggest thing I remember, other than, again, the opening credits with that iconic music, would be I never read Batman comics. I was never, like, big into superheroes at all. But with this show, I remembered every single one of the characters, even into adulthood. Like, having no other exposure other than this cartoon to the Batman story, even as an adult, I could tell you who these different characters were, specifically because of this cartoon and how well-developed the villains specifically were, that they stuck in my mind. Their primary motivation, basically that every single one of them became a crazy homicidal maniac in some sort of industrial accident. But I guess what stuck with me the most is how much it stuck with me, if that makes sense. because most cartoons from my childhood I remember watching and liking, and I didn't carry specific storylines into adulthood into my psyche.
Yeah, but absolutely.
With this one I did.
Absolutely. I mean, this show takes itself so seriously as opposed to like some other ones. I guess it sticks in your mind as an adult later. It's not just about toys and things like that, which is pretty cool. John, why don't you give us some of your memories?
I think like the rest of you, I remember watching it after school, and I was a big fan of the Tim Burton movies. I think the second Tim Burton movie was one of the first films I can recall seeing in theaters, and I remember being really awestruck by the style, the visual style of it.
Mm.
And this TV show just kind of picks up where that left off. It's got that gothic kind of look to it, not so much the white face paint and everything stark from Batman Returns, but the Art Deco, the 1930s art style, the simple animation that we've referred to. But like Aaron said, the villains were where it stuck out, that it was storytelling, that it wasn't just Batman killing crime or beating crime like you would find with Superman or X-Men, who were both at the same time. This was as much a story about the villains and storytelling as it was about Batman himself. And I think we've mentioned it in some of the other Batman movie myopia episodes, that one of Batman as a franchise, his strength is that Batman the character isn't so much important as the world around him, especially the villains. And in this show, it's very obvious, as we'll go into it with Two-Face and what they did with Mr. Freeze in particular. It's astounding. It's good storytelling, and a villain that you either love, you hate, or you love to hate. And just watching it again these past couple of days in preparation for this, I was struck again by just how great the art style was. And it still looks good. Even if the animation itself is a little choppy, the art style still holds up, and it's amazing. But, yeah, I still have a soft spot for this show from when I watched it when it originally aired. I was a little surprised to see that it was 2 volumes or 3 volumes or whatever it was, but it's packed full of episodes, some of which I'm not even sure I remember seeing. And I know I never saw the Adventures of Batman and Superman season very much. I think to our point that I had grown out of it by that point. But yeah, this was fun rewatching this.
That's awesome. Thomas, what about you?
Thomas?
Oh, good.
I'll jump in then. Hello?
Oh, wait.
There you go. Oh, am I here?
Yeah.
I don't know why I got muted. That was weird. Sorry about that. No, I think I watched this show from the beginning, even though I was 6 when this show came out. But I've always loved this show, and going back, I still really enjoy it. I agree, the Danny Elfman music from the beginning just, you know, pulls you right in. And the going back and realizing just how like deep they went into each character, and that they pulled this off in, you know, in a 30-minute segment, is just amazing. And this is what allowed Bruce Timm, who was one of the key people behind this, to really kick off the DC animated universe, which Superman, the cartoon show being aside, the rest of it was absolutely fantastic, going through Justice League and everything else. We got a really great run from, you know, this is a beginning.
Nick, what about you?
Well, listening to the rest of you, I don't know. Like, I don't know what else to add other than it's nice to see someone who understands the characters as, I mean, okay, so John, you referenced the fact that Batman Returns is your Batman movie, the one you came in on. I'm a little younger than you, but that might be the best superhero movie ever made. I really love Batman Returns, and I like both of them. But what it does is something origin movies just don't do anymore, which is assume you know anything about the fucking character, man. Batman, the animated series, hopes that you know the Batman story and then focuses on the origins of the villains. Yeah. I appreciate a show that it gives me a little bit of credit even as a kid. And guess what? It's still okay if you don't know those origin stories. Batman is this person who fights crime, and then he views the different ways that criminals are created. And some are bleak, man. One of the ones we watched, the Mr. Freeze origin story, Heart of Ice, it is crushing, man. It truly is. Meanwhile, we effectively watched three origin stories, which we'll get to in a minute, of course. But I love this show for the little things I remember that, you know, Chris Nolan didn't do as well, that Tim Burton didn't do as well. Because, like, as Thomas alluded to, this was written by Batman people. But at the same time, it's welcoming in a way that, like, Animaniacs was. It's a show that wants you to watch it and enjoy it, even if you're not a Batman person. Fandoms are notoriously difficult to get into. But mutual friend of Scott and I, Michael Krause, got me this book called Batman Black and White, which is effectively a bunch of cartoon Batman comic writers who made Batman shorts. And that he got because of my love of Batman the Animated Series. Those two things showed me what Batman could be. This incredible story that really, I really fell in love with Batman, and this show is kind of not only part of it, but like the base point. Anyone can watch this show and figure out what Batman is. This is what you show your asshole friend who's a Marvel fan.
It's about the villains, stupid.
Yes.
Marvel doesn't get that at all.
No. Fuck Ultron.
I mean, name one Marvel movie villain. Go.
Loki.
Oh, yeah, Loki, because he's in seven.
Oh, come on, he's not a villain.
And Red Skull played by Hugo.
He's an anti-hero.
He's an anti-hero.
Venom. I can go for a few. Or are you talking MCU?
MCU, Venom's coming out this year as an anti-hero, by the way.
Oh, Vulture. Man.
You're missing the obvious one. Magneto.
Yeah, there you go.
You're missing the obvious one.
I am Team Magneto. Magneto's okay, so Magneto awesome. Rocks.
Shut me down.
No, you said MCU. That's still Fox, and I know Disney owns Fox.
Yeah,
but
fair
that
enough.
Has not come under the MCU title yet.
I mean, the villain of all of them is Stan Lee, so.
That's why he's in all of them.
Right, he's going to be Thanos. Like,
he's just going to murder everyone at the end, right.
Stan Lee is a watcher. That's really what he is. Like, that was the joke in Guardians. I mean,
yeah. And they nailed it.
They did.
Well, this is what I like to call getting off track. let's move things right along here and dive into the episodes that we watched. As mentioned, we watched four episodes, and I don't know about you guys, but we started with the Two-Face two-parter that had all of the two references you could handle, but also was a very, very well-made episode. This is the... Well, just a brief summary, this is the... Essentially, it's the origin story for Two-Face. It's the fall of District Attorney Harvey Dent and the rise of his angry, repressed alter ego... that comes out after a freak accident that
was it a freak industrial accident?
Freak industrial accident that of course only
sure
alters half
Aaron,
of his body.
You're running for mayor. Your platform is just lids on vats.
Lids on vats.
Yeah, exactly. You got my vote.
what kind of statistics are you throwing out there? Like, in Gotham City, we have a 75% freak industrial accident rate. Highest in the country.
The recidivism rate of criminals based in chemical baths.
Oh my god.
Nick, you're getting a lids on vats.
Lids on vats.
Like t-shirt for your birthday. It's just anticipated.
If we ever started a merch, If we ever started a store on Myopia website, it would start with the Lids on Bats yard sign.
Lids on Bats, Gotham 2020.
Gotham 2020. Oh. Well, this was a good episode, or a two-parter episode, to get back on track again. this is one of the more serious ones, especially given the other two episodes we watched. If you saw this one first, you're like, damn, the tone of this show is so dark and serious, and there's so much at stake, and there's real characters and relationships. And then you watch the other two episodes, and they inject a lot more humor. But this one, this one's really good. They just do a great job, like, with techniques and, you know, the animation. I mean, you know, it's like they're in a box with what they can do with the animation, but they make the most of it at every turn to make it really cinematic. It's just a very, very lovely episode, I thought so.
Sure. Do you want me to give the plot synopsis?
Sure.
No, I mean, I just realized we were talking about it, and whatever. So,
if you want to get into the detail, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, so if you guys didn't know, Harvey Dent, played by everyone at this point, right? But essentially, he's the district attorney. And he is on Jim Gordon's side. He's on Batman's side. And he is frustrated with a very Gotham problem, which is that people slip through the cracks. And that's why they need a Batman. And in many ways, he's got this kind of Batman fetish in his head. Like, he wants to be able to fight crime. He wants to be able to actually stop these people. But unfortunately, he's not going after the Joker or the Penguin. He's going after organized crime boss, right? Like, and the mafia has control over judges, so everyone gets off. And he, as Scott alluded to, has an alternate, like, ego. Like, they reference to, like, multiple personality disorder. A guy named Big Bad Harv. Because Harvey Dent is this big hulking guy, but he is trying to play within the rules. But when the rules stop functioning, he snaps. And Two-Face is interesting because Two-Face still has this sense of justice. It's this bitter truth that justice is based on the flip of a coin. Whether or not someone committed a crime is irrelevant due to sheer chance. And as the district attorney, he thought he could beat it, but he can't. So as the mafia pushes him closer to the edge, we see that break where he turns into pure monster. And scene. Like,
but isn't that a beautifully deep thing to happen in a children's cartoon? Like, I was watching this and was actually moved by the writing of these two episodes and was emotionally invested in Harvey Dent's mental anguish. It's a good episode, y'all. Good episode.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, isn't it? That we've all got kind of that second face to our personality. We've all got that suppressed rage that civilized people just don't keep anymore. And Two-Face is the actual embodiment of that.
Yeah. And
to the nth degree, but yes, very much so.
And he does, I think in some ways, especially if you're one of those people who's incensed by injustice, there's almost a kind of catharsis in seeing someone, the bad guy who'll go after the bad guys. That's why Dexter was a hit show, you know. There's just something appealing about that idea of when the good guys can't get the bad guy because the system is rigged or whatever, the bad guy can get the bad guy.
Isn't that what Batman is? Isn't he the same as Two-Face? He's outside the law fighting crime.
Yeah.
I think the difference is Batman is supposed to, like, the thing is they had different limits, and yes, that's why Harvey is interesting, right? Because Batman is what every cop kind of hopes for. Like, no cop goes out thinking he's going to shoot the criminal. They think that he's going to get justice, like this teeth-gritted justice. And that's why in the intro, it's so interesting, people are just tied up and left in a spotlight, right? And by the way, yeah, Thomas didn't plug this, but you should watch the Brothers Herman video on this. I believe your brother David futzed with the intro and did a really good video for YouTube.
Oh, but, yes, he did. No, he certainly did. It should be linked in the show notes.
Yes. I'll plug it. That's what the Twitters are for. But but Harvey tried the other way, and it didn't work, so now he's going to the other extreme, which is literally burning down illegal gambling venues and just beating the shit out of people, which is great.
Right. Which is great.
It is.
Batman goes after the justice that lands the bad guys in jail. Two-Face goes after the justice that lands the bad guys in the coffin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I support
and,
either
like,
one.
Further, like Scott was kind of alluding to, and I guess you were too. He gets the Joker introduction from Batman 89. Like he falls into the vat. He's like, "Look at these tools. Like this. This is all I could do. You know, maybe plastic surgery, but oh my!
The mirror. Give me the mirror."
Yeah.
That is still the most blood curdling scene of any.
Yeah. Well, I do love that they nod to that. I mean, they're not even. And it wasn't as a joke. It was just, hey, this works here. This is also a vat of acid accident. This is how this scene always happens. They always have a mirror ready in the hospital.
I mean, it's like the Bible in the hotel. There's a mirror in every hospital.
Yeah. The mirror. I know you have one. Let me see.
Well, they know in Gotham they're going to need it because of the extreme rates of chemical vat accidents.
The chemical vat ward, of course.
That's right.
Well, good news. You turned into more of a penguin than a Two-Face.
That's right. That's the scale. It's like anything on the scale of like...
Now, what happens if... another dude has a vat accident that, like, renders half of his body useless and, like, mutated. Like, do they tell him, I'm sorry, you know, we already have a Two-Face. We're going to have to export you to Metropolis. Or listen, we get this all the time.
Binary or two-tone?
Yeah.
They have a doctor to push you a little farther down the road, so yeah. You know, you're three-quart face.
Get that Michael Jackson surgery?
Oh, whoa. I wasn't going to go there, but thank you, Nick.
Keeping myopia mornings edgy, right?
Yeah, and timely.
Yeah, right. Never. We have never been timely.
One thing that I noticed in this episode, before we move on to the next one, was Rupert Thorne, the crime boss. I closed my eyes while he was talking because I was like, I know that voice. And I had to look it up. I couldn't figure it out in time. But I don't know if the rest of you guys noticed this, but the voice was John Vernon, who plays the crusty dean in Animal House, which I thought was excellent.
No shit.
Yeah.
An excellent tidbit.
Go ahead, Aaron. Sorry.
Oh, I was just, and the crusty dean from Animal House delivered like the most poignant line in the whole two-parter, I think. Go for it, Scott. Give it to us.
The brighter the picture, the darker the negative.
Oh, there it was.
I would have loved it if there was a reference to him shutting down like a fraternity just somewhere. Like, you know, the show's not above this. Like, they make that kind of reference all the time. Like, it would have been great. He's like, ooh, chug-a-lug howl. Like,
that would have just been a little too much. There'd have to be a pun or something to get into a Batman episode. Oh, good segue. Speaking of puns, the second episode that we'll talk about here is The Heart of Ice, about Mr. Freeze trying to get his vengeance on the man who caused the, wait for it, free chemical accident that caused him to turn into a supervillain while he was doing research on how to save his wife, who's encased in... ice, I believe, of some kind.
Sure.
This episode was interesting to me because, as Nick mentioned earlier, it does have a very like dark, emotional story at its core, but it's wrapped up in, I don't know, just like to me, just not a good package. There's a lot of corny jokes. It's got a very silly ending fight. And I don't know. To me, this just wasn't as strong an episode. I don't know about you guys.
From what I remember, and someone please correct me if I'm wrong, this was supposed to be the opening episode for the series.
Mm.
And at some point they decided it was too dark to open it up with, so they put Man Bat instead. but this one, I guess it recreated the Mr. Freeze character, because he was a lot closer in the comics to the Arnold Schwarzenegger one, just constantly making puns. He's not really a serious kind of villain. He's more for just one-liners. And this one actually gave him a backstory, but they gave him a very depressing, very dark, very emotional backstory that makes you feel more for him than you do for the victims.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yes. But you're right that they still pay lip service to that with the puns, like the reporter's name is Summer. The wealthy industrialist is Ferris Boyle. And I couldn't stop listening to that stuff, like thinking, this is ridiculous. This is too many puns. Well, they such even, a serious.
They even give him
for such a serious story.
They even
yeah.
give him a Schwarzenegger line. I mean, you're right. It's probably just paying homage to the comics. But I mean, Batman yells "Freeze," and of course he responds with, "That's Mr. Freeze to you." I'm like, oh god, it's jarring. I mean, it's a little jarring given the tone of the rest of what they're trying to do. And that's kind of my problem with this one.
Do you think that that was meant for the child audience? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To lighten it up because it's supposed to be a kid's show?
Probably, especially if it's one of the first episodes. You know, they want to draw in the kids, and then later you can have dark stuff like the Two-Face origin.
But the puns were, they were just too much for me. And, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
And the bad guy was brought down by soup.
Yeah.
Oh, Erin wrote her own pun when this happened.
I was like, oh, he's a super villain.
What kind of a super villain is brought down by soup? A super villain. Oh. That could have made its way into the show.
Exactly. Exactly. I was operating on the show's level on this
one. What's the matter, chicken?
Oh
dear.
I mean, frankly, to me, the best part of this show is the fact that Batman doesn't want to fight him that episode, right? Like, that he sympathizes with the fact that Two-Face is a victim, and they don't know what to, like, and he doesn't kind of know what to do about it, right? Like, the story which they get into kinda is that his wife has a chronic illness, and so to save her, she's cryogenically frozen while he tries to find a cure. Right?
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that's literally all it is. And while frozen, the company that he's working for pulls the funding, which threatens her life. And in this, she just fucking dies. Like in the Batman movie, the fourth one, Batman and Robin with George Clooney and Arnold Schwarzenegger, she still survives even though Uma Thurman has effectively killed her. Not in this one. She's just dead.
I mean, they retconned the crap out of this episode, though. I mean, because you go forward, Mr. Freeze comes back, and I'm pretty sure his wife is still in the – I mean, not alive, but still in the vat, like, you know, frozen away.
Yeah, I don't think WB was okay with this. I mean, honestly, like, you're right. I remember that. But, like, at the end of this episode, he's not staring at her. He's staring at a figurine dancing. Like, this – and, I mean, it is brutally sad. Like, he has no interest in crime. He has interest in revenge and saving his wife. And when his wife is taken from him, it's only revenge is left. If Batman gets in the way, he gets in the way. But that's just it. There's nothing fancy here. But the puns really do make it kind of interesting. The overall story is quite tragic because, again, Batman immediately sympathizes. That doesn't make anything else easier, and it doesn't fix the fact that it's a lot of weird puns. Well, and only to correct slightly, this is 5 years, or this is probably 4 years before 1997 when that Batman movie came out. So they were cribbing from something, but maybe cribbing from this, not from the movie, right? Other way around.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the rest of you, but cold or puns aside, was the final scene the one that did it for you? If you remember that, he's in Arkham, and he's basically speaking to the ballerina
that
he, I guess, equates to his wife, saying, "I failed you.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I can only hope to meet you someday in the future in some other place."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. It cuts.
Yeah.
Well, that's it is tragic.
It's
truly sad. Because it's interesting because there's no villainous constructs here. He's wants revenge for a bad person, and he gets it, but that doesn't fix anything, right? Because the guy gets kind of shown as a fraud at the end. The head of the company that owned that, you know, pulled the funding and was giving a humanitarian award, if I recall correctly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that last scene was pretty heartbreaking. And I really like how we chose these episodes with Harvey Dent and then with Mr. Freeze as the bad guys, because these are two villains that you really sympathize with. They are somewhat the victims of circumstance. But then we ended with the Joker, who is the polar opposite of that. And I found it really fantastic the way that the writers differentiated the Joker, who's my favorite villain, from the other bad guys that they've already established.
Well, the way for me that the Joker, that Mark Hamill's Joker works so well, is how he can go from like entertaining, almost likable laughter and joking to just at the drop of a hat, just instantly terrifying. Like in the same sentence, like in the same word, he can change his voice where it's just dark and terrifying. And he just covers that whole gamut of villain, of just like, you know, Mr. Freeze, for some reason we have a bunch of puns and it's a little lighter, even though it's, you know, wrapped around a very dark story. And Harvey Dent is very dark, and then the Joker is just kind of all the things. It's scary, he's violent, but then you can have a whole Joker episode where he's just a goofball. And in this one, you get all the laughs, you get the darkness, and it was just very nice to see the Joker. He comes on screen, and we're both like, ah, yes. And that's the crazy thing about the Batman, not just this show, but in general, is when you're like happy to see the bad guys. I love that. I mean, these are just really, and what's funny is the Joker is the least established character there is.
Well, that's part of his allure, because with the other villains that we were talking, we know what their motivations are. We know how they got to the point that they're at. And with the Joker, one of the things about the Batman storyline is that the Joker character has so many different backstories that you actually don't know which one is true. And you don't really know, like the backstory in The Killing Joke, for example, is very different than from the Tim Burton movie that came out. And it's kind of a thing within the Batman universe that you don't really know the Joker's backstory officially. And that makes him more interesting. You don't know his backstory and you don't know what he wants, other than chaos.
Yeah, that's the Joker I like, is he is just chaos that exists. He is chaos, and that's all he wants. He's not, and he feeds off of his rivalry with Batman, or not even rivalry, whatever it is, just his game.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen, and he just kind of goes moment to moment, and it's great. Like, you don't need to know where he comes from or what he's trying to do.
But honestly, I do think that the animated series is going just a little bit forward. The Joker in the animated series goes darker than, I mean, other than potentially in some of the comics, goes darker than any of the movies ever do with Return of the Joker and Batman Beyond.
you know, basically taking, you know, brainwashing Robin and like to try and get him to shoot Batman. I mean, he breaks people. It's terrifying.
You see it in this one. You see the way he treats Harley in this episode.
Oh yeah, no. It,
pinching it's, her cheek and then smacking her and throwing her across the room all at the same time. Like, yeah, that's one of the things that's terrifying.
Yeah, we should describe the episode though. Sure. The last one we watched is called "The Man Who Killed Batman." The Man Who Killed Batman is it's a sillier episode. It's kind of a comic in many ways, but effectively this little third rate. Like mobster who everyone thinks is just cannon fodder accidentally kills Batman. At least that's what he thinks. He ends up fighting with Batman on a rooftop and he falls into an explosion. And the many criminals of Gotham start worshiping him / seeing him as like the kingpin because he's the one who actually brought down the Batman. And the one who takes it the hardest, most interestingly, is the Joker, who is not only jealous that Batman, that this little toady guy killed Batman, but quite possibly, this is where you get into the, does he kind of just love Batman kind of thing? Where
can he exist without Batman? Is there a Joker without a Batman?
Because, like, Joker can't exist unless there's a superhero, right? Like that, and that's kind of what they're alluding to here, that this crazy, masochistic, horrifying monster man needs his cliched, ultra-powerful villain type in, like, it doesn't work without the dichotomy. And so they have this incredible hatred for this little guy who may or may not have killed the Batman.
It's a fun episode. I really enjoyed it. It's definitely fun. I mean, everyone trying to take him down too, because now Sid the Squid's the name of the bumbling criminal, but Sid the Squid's the king of the heap now. Everyone trying to, if he's the big cheese. I mean, it's just, you're right. It's fun. And, but with the Joker it just puts it on a whole other level. That funeral scene, fake funeral scene or whatever. I mean, the Joker, that scene alone goes from jovial cracking jokes in the same sentence to just ripping this guy apart and then going, you know, now we're going to stick him in this box down that chute into that vat of acid. Vat of acid alert. Hashtag vat of acid.
Well, I mean, I do like the idea that vats of acid just kind of cure things to the Joker now. Like, that's something. You know, and I guess just doffing your cap to the fact that this is the one we watched that had Harley Quinn in it. And as the creation of this show, she's phenomenal as a character. She's really great.
Oh, yeah. Harley's awesome.
I don't think the show would be the same without her, honestly. Or the DC universe in general now.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, to your point, right, the Joker can be darker with her adding comic relief because she's someone who is a Joker person, but not always convinced that what he's doing is not insane. And so her levity is interesting. The fact that she was a person before the Joker, and we know who she was and that she was a psychiatrist and that like that part of her is still around kind of is interesting. And it shows up in this episode where she's the one who springs him, Sid the Squid, from jail as, I guess, pretending to be his attorney, et cetera. Like, it's neat. It is kind of neat.
And she's good at grounding the Joker because he could be just a freewheeling kind of maniac, but his reactions to what she says and their whole back and forth, it creates a different character for the Joker, that he's a little more well-rounded, that he's got someone that he kind of sort of cares about, but maybe not really, but we're not really sure what their relationship really is, whether it's really two-sided or just her madly in love with him. But she adds a new dynamic to who would otherwise be a very flat character.
Agreed.
Well, this is a good moment to let's start wrapping things up and take.
I'm sorry, I killed that discussion.
No. We're running up against it. This is perfect.
and actually, I'll just add to this episode. Yeah. This was the one I watched first of the ones that we saw, and I was struck in the opening scenes of this, the lighting that they had. Yeah, now, it was very, very well put together in terms of just like street lights or car lights or shadows being thrown on walls. It was very well done.
Yeah, agreed. That's one thing that we've noticed with myopia with some of these cartoons that we've returned to. I've been like, oh my gosh, did they churn out this animation in like 3 hours in somebody's basement? Like some truly terrible stuff. But this is masterful and beautiful still.
Well, Aaron, why don't you kick us off and finish your thought and go over how this held up for you, some of your final thoughts.
Well, I, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is a series that the storylines actually stuck with me into adulthood. And I remember speaking with Scott even at some point within the past year and saying, hey, do you remember that Batman thing that we watched as a kid? I'd really like to watch that again. So I actually revisited this on my own time as an adult recently, and I watched every single episode. I really think there's some strong stuff here, specifically with the storytelling, both in the writing and in the presentation. I would highly recommend, I'd highly recommend a rewatch.
Absolutely. John, what about you?
Yeah, this held up very well, and I went on and watched a few other episodes that I remember, and some of them held up pretty well, and some of them did not. But it's just a well put together, it's a well thought out series. And the animation, I mean, like I just said, the lighting is good on some of the episodes, it's fantastic. But then some of the animation itself is lacking. Like, it's very jarring, it's very blocky. It's like sometimes they skipped it a little bit on the budget. But overall, it's the stories that do it, and you've got good character development, you've got excellent plots, and we didn't mention it in the discussion of the Mr. Freeze episode, but that episode won an Emmy for best writing, and it was just fantastic, and we're still talking about it, and this, I think, is still kind of the gold standard for animated comic book shows. I vaguely recall the X-Men TV show trying to take a more serious tone, I think because this show did. And, you know, I will never forgive Superman for trying to latch on to this in its third season. But, you know, here. It's still really good.
Nick?
Yeah, here's the thing about this show. I think you guys nailed it. It's excellent. It's pretty to look at. The characters are good. It's amazing how good it is at being controlled in the kind of show and don't tell, or vice versa, not both. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of scenes where it's just Batman looking. There's a lot of tension built from the fact that we don't know exactly what's going on, but it's okay. You forgive flat characters and you forget simplicity because it's doing so much with so little. And it's really quite impressive. Not unlike Aaron, but a little bit further in the past, I had rewatched a bunch of this. And so Scott has been pitching a TV version of this, of Myopia, for a long time. And you just kind of knew that this is something we had to do. It's almost hard to nail it down. And so very flippantly, I picked a handful of episodes from a list that I remembered, and, you know, we chose them intentionally. But it's just one of those things where we could have picked anything. Even a shitty episode from the first two seasons is still kind of a masterpiece in some ways, in just simple storytelling. There's not a lot of exposition. There's not a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of like well-done storytelling purely through visuals. And for that, I think you should check it out.
Thomas.
I mean, I don't have a ton to add from all of that. I can respond to John's point about kind of sometimes where the animation's a little jarring, where it's not hitting the mark. One of the problems around this time period, and Disney kicked this off, is that we would outsource animation to different production houses in Korea, Japan, France. I mean, wherever we could get it done the cheapest to try and bring down the price, just because making cartoon shows is very expensive. And so if you can get the anime, you can send off what you need, but get it to a good art house, you should be able to get a good product back. But sometimes the controls don't work as well as you want them to, and that's some of those episodes, especially first season for Batman, that really, really clash with the standard that we came to know and love.
Sure.
But this show is amazingly paced, and one of the things I researched, because we talked about time length, is that, I mean, shows got an extra, I guess, what, 3.5 minutes or so back in the early 90s than they do now for total commercial time, and it's, I guess, you know, that along with how just well this was paced and the cinematography really just let them tell a complete story even in the limited time frame they had per episode. Because they didn't do a ton of two-parters. I mean, Two-Face, yes, but typically not, you know, not very often. And this show just managed to nail down character. I mean, it was just a character study through and through. And I think that's really why it still holds up, because it's just amazingly well-acted, well-drawn, and just well put together.
And I didn't do this to anyone else, but I hate Thomas, so if you look at the Batman logo, you can see that, where occasionally the colors invert. And I noticed that especially in the Heart of Ice episode, where, like, it would turn from black on yellow to yellow on black because of like you were alluding to, like the cheap animation where they didn't have the right Korean animation studio yet, as the Simpsons joke always was. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nice catch.
Yeah.
For me, yeah, this is, I mean, you guys hit all the different parts. I mean, this is a wonderfully produced show in all ways, and, you know, any limitations they might have run into with animation or the motion of it, they worked around it, you know, having Batman fight in silhouette or just utilizing the art direction and the music, the voices, the characters. It's just all really iconic. I've been playing Arkham Knight on PlayStation, and the whole Arkham trilogy, it's Mark Hamill as Joker, and it's the original voices for Batman and Harley, and it's just wonderful to revisit that in another way. And it just made me really nostalgic for this show, so it's kind of perfect timing for me, and I'm really glad we watched it this month.
Good female characters too, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we're at the end and I shouldn't be throwing another thing in there, but good female characters. I liked the female representation. The women were important to the plot, and that's something today is really in the media and in the headlines about how few good female parts there are and things like that. And this being, I mean, early 90s, what was that, 20 years ago, this being a 20-year-old cartoon show, the women played important parts in this series, and I appreciated mm-hmm. that.
Well, absolutely.
And if I remember right, one of the best episodes was when Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy team up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I remember that episode, and I loved that episode, because they're both sick of being taken advantage of and taken for granted, so they decide to go off and do a girls' club thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
God, I love this show.
Well, I like it. That's a good way to end this one, guys. That'll do it for us on this month's Myopia Mornings. Be sure to subscribe to Myopia Defend Your Childhood wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. We'll be back next month with another attempt to ruin your precious Saturday morning memories as we go on one hell of a magical field trip. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
I'm going to have that song stuck in my head for, you know, the next few hours, right? Just from that little plug right there.
Myopia Mornings is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Scott Miller and co-hosted by Nick Hoffman and Aaron Greer. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Buddy by Ben Sounds, and the music is available on bensounds.com. Please rate and review Myopia Defend Your Childhood on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. Tune in next week when we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks.